Hey, you're listening to yet another episode of the CTO Advisor. We're getting into kind of our stride for the new year. I'm breathing deeply. 2021 is over. 2022 is in, and we are full diving into Web3 on this podcast. I have a Web3 guy from the Twitters. Because that seems to be where most of the conversation is going. That and Clubhouse, if you still do Clubhouse. I have would be David Aronchek. Dave, where do you work? Other than, you know, a Twitter personality. I just know you from an introduction from a common mutual associate on mutual friend on Twitter, Alex Ellis, who we had on the podcast. Where do you work?
Alex is amazing, by the way. So I am a co-director of research development at Protocol Labs. Protocol Labs, you probably haven't heard of. We try and stay a little bit in the background, but many of the folks who are here at Protocol Labs worked on IPFS and Filecoin. IPFS is the Interplanetary File System. It's been around for about 7 years, I think it was 2013. So now we're at 9 years, I guess. The idea is to have your data be shared everywhere in the world in a much more distributed, friendly way. And I co-lead research development here.
So it's really interesting. I guess my first question, like right out the gate, like I absolutely get the utility of IPFS. But when I think of Web3, my first thoughts go to crypto, because that's the, you know, main use case that I see on basically mass media and even some of the more technical trade platforms. And by trade platforms, I mean IT platforms.
Yeah.
Break down to me let's first define Web3. What is Web3?
Well, if you could define Web3, you're smarter than most folks out there, because just about everyone has a different definition. Let me give you a little bit of my background and how I kind of landed here, because that'll give you the basis for what Web3, you know, my interpretation of Web3. So before I was doing this, I worked at Google, and I led product management for Kubernetes, the, you know, global scale distributed platform for taking a whole bunch of resources, you know, and hiding them behind a very clean API. So I can say, oh, I just want to deploy this thing and I want to do it across whatever 17 different machines. Kubernetes takes care of that for you. Very, very powerful stuff. And there were other ones out there at the time, and they all have their pluses and minuses. For better or worse, Kubernetes did pretty well, and we had a lot of success. From there, you know, I went and co-founded the Kubeflow project, which is kind of same thing, but for machine learning. So it's taking Kubernetes and allowing you to distribute across all of these various resources, disk and VMs and so on. Behind a single API, making it very easy to, if you want to go out and you want to use machine learning, you want to train machine learning, things like that, you can take this very large number of distributed machines, merge them together behind a single API, and then do what you needed to get done. And, you know, those two together really gave me a sense for the power behind this distributed world out there. You know, I'm, you know, in the olden days, you would go out and you'd, you know, spend whatever, $250,000 with Sun Microsystems on a single machine. And if that single machine's power supply went out, or disk went out, or memory went bad, or the motherboard went bad, you were in bad shape. The idea, you know, it's certainly not new, but behind these systems is, how do you distribute the load between all of these various machines, giving you additional resilience, giving you the ability to target what you need and make specific resource requests and things like that, and pack a whole bunch of things together rather than having everything contention in a single box sitting there. Okay, so when I came to that understanding, you know, and started looking at various jobs out there, I did talk to the protocol folks because IPFS really leaned into that kind of space. It's the idea that, boy, there's a lot of machines out there and each of those machines has a disk attached. Wouldn't it be great if we could treat them all like a single machine, like a single giant disk that you could write stuff to and pull it out? And if a single one of those boxes went away, the system automatically repaired and figured out and redistributed that load to other machines and so on and so forth. So a lot of real genius there. That is really the core of Web3. Certainly, there's a lot of air sucked out of the room by people doing decentralized finance and speculating on the price of this and the coin of that and whatever. But at the end of the day, it's this idea that you can decentralize across everything, right? Identity, trust, compute, resources, so on and so forth. How do you spread that out? Now, the problem is that as you think about spreading this thing out, the number one thing you're going to run into is trust. How do you prevent someone coming along and looking at your data or lying to you, say, oh, you know, I did run this compute, except they didn't actually run the compute, they lied to you, or there's some malicious actor, or so on and so forth. And so the core of this decentralized system is this idea of how do you decentralize trust? And the way to do that today is with things like blockchain, where you can say without question that this thing happened in this way. You prove it with math, you know, with private keys and so on. And then once that's complete, you can now spread that awareness to everyone and say, hey, everyone, this thing happened at this time. This person signed in at this time. This person, you know, exchanged value with that person over there, so on and so forth. And so that kind of decentralized trust is really, really powerful. That's also, by the way, how you get to the value of coins, right? Because what you want to do is you want to have a way to capture the value exchange. So, for example, if I have a disk and I offer up a gigabyte of disk to the network, I should get paid. Ideally, you know, there's not some central authority paying me. It's the network that pays me. And whoever wanted to store, you know, data on there, I can prove to them that I stored this for, you know, an hour and, you know, have that come back. And that's something that we have in Filecoin called proof of space time. At the end of it, you know, they put in a certain amount of Filecoin to the system. The person who was storing it put it, you know, paid me in Filecoin. No transaction fees, no anything. It just happens automatically through math. So, you know, it's not an easy answer. It's, you know, there's certainly a lot of subtlety to it. But when you hear Web3, really think about decentralization and in particular, decentralized trust that is validated with the system. And that's really what, you know, we're trying to get to here.
So some of my nascent thoughts on this back in 2013, 2014, when Google first did Google Fiber, I kind of thought about, well, what's the, this is obviously pre-pandemic and pre-work from anywhere, but one of my initial thoughts was, man, you know what, it'd be really cool if somebody came up with a distributed cloud. The Web3, basically. This idea that, you know, there's an awful lot of idle compute connected to this highly, you know, maybe there's high latency relative to a data center or even a corporate network, but the sheer amount of distributed compute, distributed storage, those resources that are idle, if I took a gig from, you know, 100 users or 10,000 users across a pretty resilient network, I can create some really interesting services. I thought about it more in the centralized traditional web, that two type of concept that, you know, if a centralized agency or a centralized entity coordinated all of that compute, the trust would be with the centralized agency. But, you know, IPFS and blockchain and all of these efforts have looked to solve the trust issue, distributed trust issue with technologies. Completely valid look. I think where we're at now is the usability of it. Like when I think of like kind of my initial set of desire that if I have a bunch of storage that I need to archive, let's say a petabyte of storage.
Yeah.
And I want to outsource. I don't want to manage that petabyte of storage in my data center. I'm not going to need it. It just needs to be archived, and it needs to be spread. And I don't care if it's spread across 10,000 nodes or not. I just need to make sure that when I need it, I can get it. And that when I'm getting it, it's what I requested is what I'm getting back in the time frame that I want to get it back.
Yep.
From a practical, and I think IPFS is a good thing to pick on, because it's been out there for a little bit now.
Yep.
What are some of the solutions, or what are some of the problems something like a distributed file system like IPFS, file system like IPFS solves?
Well, so you bring up a really excellent question. First off, I will be the first to say that IPFS is nowhere near as usable as we would like it to be. We want it to be as usable as any POSIX file system out there in the world. You should be able to write to it as easily as you write to your local machine. There is a core element here, though, and I really don't want to like paper over it. There are a lot of folks out there who are like, Web3 is going to replace Web2. I cannot disagree with that strongly enough, right? Mm. You need to pick and choose the things that work in your new world and use them where it makes sense. So take your petabyte example. There's a dashboard out there that you can go and check. I haven't checked recently, but storing a petabyte of data on IPFS, I think is going to cost you about $10 a year or something like that. Like, it's absurdly cheap. We have 14 exabytes of space. That's not an exaggeration. Exabytes of space available on the network, ready for anyone. And it is unbelievably cheap. However, it is way worse performance than anything out there. You could go and measure it against a, 1200 RPM drive, and it's going to be slower than that. Mm. That's not bad. It just does a different function, right? And so you start to get smart about how to build caching layers and things like that. And there are many, many people in the Filecoin ecosystem who actually do this, right? So you can use a third-party service, and we already have deals and partnerships with folks like Cloudflare and so on to make those caching layers and performance much better. So I'm a huge fan of, like, look, pick your Web1 technology. Use that. DNS is still great. You know, if you have a big database, you probably want to run that on a single machine. There's lots of reasons to use Web1. There's lots of reasons to use Web2, things like Kubernetes and Kubeflow and so on. And there's lots of reasons to use Web3. Just pick and choose the things that are good fits for those particular situations. I don't want to paper over your comment. Though it's funny, because the performance of IPFS, I'm not that concerned about it, right? Like, yes, it's slow. It'll get faster. It'll get much faster. We actually have a lot of innovation coming out this year that's going to make it much faster. But I don't ever want to compete with your local disk, let alone something, you know, sitting on NVMe or some super high performance thing. It just serves a different function. What I want more than anything is, you know, brain dead easy ways to submit, storage to it, to run processing over this enormous amount of data that's out there at extremely low cost, and to get results, and to make those APIs so easy that, you know, you kind of are scratching your head, even like, well, maybe I should write to that and just figure out how to use really slow disk because it's so cheap and it goes to exactly what you just described. I don't have to think about managing those thousands of hard drives, physical hard drives, to store that petabyte of data, because IPFS does that for me. So that's how I see the biggest failures for me are just continuing to make it easier to use.
Yeah, my mind is kind of racing with like HPC type of use cases that once you get the data out onto the network, you have this amazing amount of compute.
Absolutely.
You need a way to coordinate all of that compute, et cetera. And I'm sure there's projects and solutions out there that's helping to coordinate the running of compute, the isolation of instances, the validation. Again, the validation that the compute that I wanted to run is actually the compute that I run. I'm not getting a result that's different. You know, the fact that I can run the same thing slightly differently across 10,000 nodes has some type of utility to me naturally. I haven't really sat down and thought about it, but the fact that I can get either the same result or the same expected result
Yeah.
When I make slight changes across a set of data or a different set of, I can version date. I can, you know, think if we think about earlier in your career and think about Qflow and yeah. the maturing of this, there's like an unlimited number of use cases. So I buy the concept that Web3 is real. I buy the concept that there are utilities across Web 1 and Web 2 that Web 3 will either enhance or enable. One of the things that that we haven't cracked the nut around, I remember maybe it was about 5 years ago when I was looking at kind of blockchain and beyond the trust models, I think IBM played around. I haven't looked at it in about 4 or 5 years, but IBM played around with other models that weren't token based for paying for work done on the blockchain or proof of work done on the blockchain. There were other rewards, like whatever it is. What I haven't kind of cracked my head around or wrapped my head around is the level of effort that it takes, the amount of compute that it takes to do this distributed compute. I did not expect, when I thought about this circa 2013, 2014, I didn't think about the cost of the compute. And I think we pick on GPUs as the biggest problem. Is there a model in which, you know, we're not costing more than the compute, than it was just idle? Yeah. You know, the computers are on.
Yeah. You know, it is a really fascinating question. I remember when I first got to Google and saw, you know, talked to a lot of the folks in the MapReduce space. For those that don't know, MapReduce was the one of the innovations that allowed Google in very early days to index the entire web, you know, which is a really hard problem. You have all the storage, you have all these machines. How do you have each machine do a processing on a single thing and then merge all that together? So you map it all out and then you work on it and you reduce it by bringing it back. You know, it was really fascinating because it's one of these problems where you're kind of like, well, that seems pretty easy, right? Couldn't I just write bash script and just execute it? Like, how hard could that be? And it turns out that it is easy to do on a single machine, but the moment you start spinning it out to 1,000 different machines, how do you know that, exactly like you said, machine number 770 finished properly, that it, you know, didn't crash halfway through, that it submitted the result, and, oh, by the way, this is duplicate with, you know, 300, you know, machine number 322, right? Like, there's all these, like, weird problems that you have to solve for. And so having a structure around that internally at Google, they built their own, and they published papers around it. You can go read it. Folks that are listening, if you haven't read it already, where they talk about all these kind of things. Today, you could argue that the vast majority of money and data is being made on this very problem, right? When you go out and look at the big data companies, the ones that are getting the most funding, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of valuation. They are, you know, being paid simply for storing a bunch of data and then letting you run compute against them. Now, you know, it's not certainly not their only thing. And certainly some of the scenarios that you're going to have there are very high performance ones. But lots and lots of them are very, very slow. It's like, all right, hey, by tomorrow, I need this data processed in a way that that is usable for me to do a training job against, or that lets me, you know, figure out what the average number of people in whatever Peoria, you know, spent on Starbucks, right? Like, whatever it is, I don't need that right now, but if you can get that to me by tomorrow, that'd be great. And those are the kind of scenarios where if you had a appropriate structure over, you know, low performing disk that has lots of spare capacity, you just submit the job and by tomorrow you have the answer and you have it at, you know, 1/1,000th the cost or less, right? Because the disk is just sitting there and the space is just sitting there. So why not use it? So I'm completely with you. Like, there's no question the needs are out there. It's just a matter of how we bridge from this world where we are today into a distributed and trustless and, you know, infinite capacity world tomorrow.
Yeah, so to drive this home for much of my audience, yeah, I have audience that's kind of in the cloud native world. I have audience that's in traditional enterprise IT. If you're in traditional enterprise IT, think of SAP, SAP query that takes 3 weeks to run, and it fails. I mean, that the problem isn't that it takes 3 weeks to run. The problem is that it fails.
Yeah.
And it normally fails because of some type of capacity, timeout, et cetera. Absolutely. What happens when so when we go to SAP with that problem, the solution is SAP HANA. SAP HANA, in-memory database, I can do the same query in a day or less, or in a half an hour, 45 minutes, doesn't matter the gain of time. The benefit isn't the reduced time, but the certainty that I will get the result in a time that the business needs the result. What happens when there's an in-between? What happens when there's a solution that will, let's say that it takes 3.5 weeks or 2.5 weeks, the SLAs are the same, but the difference is the reliability. I can reliably put something onto, I can reliably put a question onto a network and get the answer within a within a dependable amount of time and with some certainty. I think this is the potential of Web3 and augmenting enterprise IT capabilities. So without spending up a whole staff to deploy SAP and the SAP HANA and the resources that it requires, there's kind of this middle step that
that's such a perfect
solution for problem.
Yeah, that's such a perfect example, and we in the Web3 world, this is my opinion, would be idiotic to attempt to replace SAP. Talk about something that has global adoption and is great APIs and great all these kind of things, but imagine that a component of SAP, instead of being, SAP can deploy to a number of different databases, can deploy to a number of different like solutions out there. Like you could say, hey, you know what? This is a slow running job. SAP, can you communicate with, for example, in this case, IPFS to submit this long running job? We're going to give you, 7 nines, 8 nines of reliability because we're going to figure out how to get this thing done no matter what. But you and user keep using SAP. It's great. It's going to get you your answer in, defined amount of time, whatever your business requirements are. We're going to get you that advice or that answer. But we're going to take on being reliable for that. And that's a perfect example, like where you're not replacing your stuff that you're using today. You're using the stuff you know and love just behind the scenes. It becomes far more reliable and far more cost effective.
So, David, we're a little bit over. I appreciate the time. Where can folks find out more about what you're doing?
So your best thing is just go to the Protocol Labs website. We have everything up there. That's protocol.ai. In addition to that, by the way, if you're interested in distributed compute in any way, please reach out to me. I'm on Twitter. My last name, Aronchick. That's A-R-O-N-C-H-I-C-K, Aronchick. On Twitter. I'm sure that you'll get links or whatever in the show notes. Email me directly. We're actually actively doing a lot of development around this right now. And if you have particular use cases or scenarios, or you'd like to, help us code it, we can do that too. But there's a lot of activity around this. And then, of course, IPFS. You can go to ipfs.io to read all about it. All the insanely cool and advanced math necessary to make everything you see here cryptographically secure and validated and so on is all up there, and you can read white papers till your eyes bleed.
All right. If you want to find out more about the CTO Advisor, you can follow us on the web, thectoadvisor.com. I'm always available on Twitter. DMs are open at CTO Advisor. Rate the podcast, share it with your aunt. She will love talking about crypto-related IPFS, independent theory file systems. I guarantee it. Talk to you next CTO Advisor podcast.